Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Jen O'Pry, and it is time for Atlanta Business Radio's Culinary Atlanta episode. Jen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
How are things at Streamline?
They are awesome. We are just rocking it out.
Well, thank you very much for last Friday helping us kick off our first Facebook Live event. You guys were instrumental in making that a success. Thank you.
It was a pleasure. And if you haven't tried Facebook Live, what a cool feature, isn't it?
That's right. For all things social media, streamlinecc.net.
Perfect. Yep.
Well, Jen, excited. We got Natasha Carey here with Flavor EXP. Welcome, Natasha.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Natasha, can you talk a little bit about Flavor EXP? What are you doing for folks?
So Flavor EXP is a boutique marketing agency. We focus a lot on website development and graphic design, branding, that sort of thing.
But you started, your background's in the hospitality industry?
Yes. I've been in hospitality for quite some time. In Atlanta, I was with Wolfgang Puck Catering. I was a part of the opening sales team for the Georgia Aquarium. Mm-hmm. And I was there for about 10 years or so.
How did you get into it?
Into hospitality in general? Well, it kind of runs in my blood. My family, I come from a Mediterranean background, and we all love to eat and talk and just gather.
And you're like, how can I make a career out of this?
Exactly. Well, it didn't kind of come to me until much later. I call it my quarter life crisis. I had one of those. I went to culinary school and wanted to get into catering sales, and that's kind of how I started.
So not the cooking part?
No, I went to school, and my dean even said to me, you know, once you get in here, you're going to want to be a chef. And I said, no, I really just want to learn. I want to learn how it's cooked so that I could sell it. So that's kind of where I went into it.
So how come you didn't do the cooking thing?
I did it for a while. I did work in kitchens in New York and in North Carolina. And, you know, I was at a point where I wanted to really be in sales. I'm more of a people person. And being in the kitchen, you're kind of are stuck to the line and and doing that sort of
thing.
Those
are your people.
Yes. And I loved it. I still cook all the time. I kind of microblog my cooking and recipes and things like that. But it's just more of a hobby at this point.
And then from that culinary school, then you got jobs in catering and sales and things like that?
Yeah, I started out at the Buckhead Club here in Atlanta back mm-hmm. in 2003 and worked there. And through networking, through associations, I met the people who were running the aquarium and starting up the Wolfgang Puck side of things. And that's kind of how I got into Wolfgang Puck.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize, that sometimes at these venues, a professional group is running the food part, right? It's not just the people that work at the aquarium.
Exactly, yes. Well, and it was a unique setting for us there. A lot of venues usually have a list of caterers that they provide services for. And mm-hmm. with the aquarium, they really wanted one caterer to take ownership of the space, take care of the space, be responsible for it. And Bernie Marcus had a vision from the beginning of, you know, partnering with Wolfgang Puck. And mm-hmm. That's kind of where it started.
And what was that like doing events at the aquarium?
It was crazy. It was crazy good. When we first opened, they estimated that we would have about, you know, maybe 100 or so events. And we
100 in a year?
In a year. And right. we had about 750 in that first year.
750 wow. events yes. in a year.
We would, on average, get about 1,500 inquiries a week.
Wow. It Y'all was, are busy.
Yeah. And it was funny because, you know, these days, you know, when you hear somebody, I'm busy. And it's that busy was crazy busy.
So you're doing 2-3 events simultaneously or
oh, yeah.
different places in the aquarium?
Yep. We could host up to 6 events at a time. And sometimes there were 6 of different events happening at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
We had a lot of sleepless nights. you know, when we first opened, we had 3 salespeople. Again, they had no idea what it would bring. And after we soon opened, we started changing our processes and
systems. So you had to get worse salespeople, right? These people are too good.
Right, exactly. It's like, let's bring it down. No, they did just such a great job of putting it out there, of marketing it and PR, they did their job well. So people were just so excited about being there and wanting to be there. We had people that would call us and just say, you know, leave a message saying, I don't care what it is and where it is. I just want to have my event there. Here's my contract. Where's my contract? So
now, was there any event that stands out in your mind of a proud moment? Or maybe something funny or surprising?
Well, Wolfgang himself came and would help out with events here and there. And he came to one of our opening events. But the one year, it was about a year and a half after we opened, he came to a fundraising event that we were helping out with the aquarium. And he didn't like the way that the table arrangement was set up and asked me to switch it last minute. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you don't understand. There's people sitting at these tables. And if I switch it, you know, there's a table of seven, table of eight. I can't just switch it immediately. And he made me switch it. You know, what Wolfgang wants, Wolfgang gets. But it was great. He's so passionate. Working alongside him was really amazing to see him so down to earth and he's built such an amazing product and empire and really believes in it and mm-hmm. doesn't mind, you know, he gets his hand dirty just like everybody else does.
Now,
Now,
was there anything that you learned from that experience that helped kind of spur you to say, you know what, I'm going to take a swing at this on my own?
I've always had an entrepreneurial side of me, but honestly, I didn't really think that I could do something on my own until I did Alt MBA. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of those things that gave me a swift kick in the ass, so to speak, to just say, you know what, take a risk and do it. It's a little harder to do that. I have two younger children and wanting to make sure that I'm not taking, you know, a risk for my family. But going through the Alt MBA program really helped me realize that, you know what, I do have the background that I need to do what I'm doing. Right. And that if I don't try, I will never know.
Now, what cohort were you in the Alt MBA?
I was in a cohort OPAL and Alt MBA 10.
Oh, so just this past one.
Yeah.
So this was kind of, it must have been on your radar that you were considering it then, because it just ended.
Yes. Well, I signed up in January, just when we were supposed to send in our applications. And I had been, it's one of those things that I had been thinking about for a long time. I just never really took the leap. And so something happened when I just applied for the program in January, even knowing that I wasn't going to find out for another month, which was brutal, whether I got in or not. It kind of gave me more confidence just knowing that I applied for it, that I took that step. And that kind of helped facilitate the conversations with my husband, who's my business partner, and talking through, you know, what would it look like? How would it feel and work? And we started then making the plans, and we opened up our doors in March.
And then how did you go out to the public and let people know that this exists now?
Well, through right now, we're focusing a lot through our internal market, people that we know through associations. We do have our, you know, Facebook page up and website and so forth. So it's really very grassroots right now, just getting the word out through the people that we know and through clients that we have at this point.
So now, getting back to, I want to go back to the Alt MBA for a second. What were some of the things that you did in that program that helped kind of you feel like confident to do this?
Were there any
exercises or any of the prompts?
Really, the feedback, the commenting part is really what was powerful to me, I think, in regards to getting feedback from people with the intent of helping you grow. So it's non-judgmental.
Right, that generous skeptic.
Yeah, it was overwhelming, and just trying to keep up with all of it was hard. Right. but it was fascinating how much information people were willing to take time to share with you based on reading your work and being able to provide that was immensely just the effort on those people was just so appreciated.
That's one of the things in the Alt MBA, just so for those who aren't familiar, the rhythm of the Alt MBA, it's a sprint. It's 28 days and you do, 14 projects by the time you're done in the 28 days. But the rhythm is you do a project And then the very next day, you have to comment on five people's projects. And five people are commenting on yours. And then the day after that, you have a reflection statement where you are going to read everybody's comments and then kind of reflect back on what you would do differently if you could do it again, or what you learned from the project. So every day you're doing something. There's no days off. In this.
No. I know, it's funny, but you know, when they described it, it's Tuesdays and Thursdays and Sundays. Right. And I was like, it's really every day.
Right. Just like when you own your own business.
Exactly. It never stops. Ends.
And you just did a segment on that, didn't you, on Friday?
Right. That's what our Facebook Live event was about, was the lessons learned from the Alt MBA program. I was in the 11th cohort, so which was happening simultaneously with yours, but separately.
Yes.
So that was a very important program for me to go through as a leader of this company and helping this company grow. The lessons we learned there were very instrumental of some of the activities that we're doing, you know, today.
Yeah.
Even experimenting with the Facebook Live was part of, that was my project 14.
Oh, nice. Getting out of your comfort zone.
That's right.
That's always a fun one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like every prompt was that.
And it was funny because I'm a proponent of getting outside of your comfort zone. And when I was a director of sales, I led my team in that way and finding solutions and finding programs. And it was funny because I realized that I wasn't doing it for myself outside of working
your
with
work.
A company.
Right.
So being a part of Wolfgang Puck and the aquarium and selling that and being a part of that was easy, you know, being outside of that. And I think that's what stopped me from doing something on my own for so long is that, you know, who would want to listen to me kind of thing. And the vulnerability and the openness that came through talking through my teammates, realizing that everybody felt the same way, you know, right. And there's many accomplished people and, you know, everybody felt that they might not be good enough. And I said, oh, wow, I'm not the only one that feels that way.
So let me ask you, growing up, did you play any sports? Or are you competitive by nature?
Very competitive.
Yep.
Yes. I played tennis and I played soccer. I still play tennis. And while I play to have fun, I play to win. Yeah.
See, that's something I noticed, like when I start talking to female entrepreneurs and business owners, that is something that I think we all share is, you know, a lot of them were athletes growing up. I was an athlete. I look at all my friends who play Division I sports and everything. They're all either in sales or they own their own business. And it's because they thrive off of that competition and that. Yeah. I mean,
I love competition.
And leadership, and yes.
I like to compete just to compete sometimes.
What, Jen, what sport did you play?
I played basketball until I stopped growing. And then I played softball, and I actually went in an umpired softball. I got hurt, couldn't play anymore, and umpired. So,
yeah, nice.
Whole backside, do it.
It's interesting because we work with some young people here, mentoring them, and one of them is Katie Galley, and she was a athlete at Oglethorpe. She was a track athlete. And then her dream was to go to the Olympics, and then she didn't go. Oh. And then now it's like, I was gearing my whole life towards this objective, and now what do I do? So she was in that place where she started a podcast about it, and it's called Keep Moving Forward. And it's about that. What do you do now to keep moving forward? And she interviews athletes in their, this next stage of their life.
Yeah, we had a conversation on the way out the other day, and that's what I was thinking. And I was telling her, I said, so many female entrepreneurs have an athletic background.
That's interesting.
So now in your business, you're getting the word out. You're kind of in this kind of exciting new stage.
Yeah.
Has there been anything that's frustrating or surprised you at this point?
Not yet. It's coming, I'm sure. Yeah.
Are you starting to get clients? Are you getting work?
Yeah, we do. What I've also realized is when you first start your business, you kind of don't want to say no and you want to take whatever comes your way.
Right.
So while we are focusing on events and hospitality, we've had people that know us are reaching out and saying, well, hey, do you do this? Hey, can you help me with this? And, you know, with my background and my husband's background, we cover a lot of bases. And then we also have a great team of developers and designers that we can tap into. So, you know, we recently did a project with a company where they had an outdated software program that was a custom software program that, you know, now they needed it to do things that nobody can do because nobody's, you know, the people that they worked with are not around anymore.
Right.
So we've come in and updated it. you know, working with them and kind of now creating more software solutions. So something not really tied to what we
right,
do. But
you wouldn't have anticipated while you were planning the business, right?
No, and not even marketing to it at all. They just kind of fell into it. It's like, oh, well, maybe we'll look in further into this. Yeah.
What's the big fish? What event in Atlanta or even outside of Atlanta do you want?
Oh, you know, it's funny. I've done a lot of big events that I want to focus on the smaller ones. You know, I've working with the Aquarium and Wolfgang Puck was amazing because we got to do so many different things.
Right, the variety was
with
insane.
So many different clients. You know, we did events up to 10,000 people, and to be able to cater that, and it was funny internally when an event would come up, it's just 2,000 people, you know?
No big deal.
You got to a point where it just kind of was something that you did every day.
Right.
My passion really is, I kind of, maybe it's my competitive side too, but mm-hmm. I kind of like rooting for the underdog. So I want to help the underdog. So that's where small business, I feel, you know, it's passionate people that love what they do and are passionate about their product or their brand or their goal or their cause, if it's a nonprofit. And they're so busy doing that they miss sight on what they're doing to market themselves and telling their story. They're mm-hmm. doing a disservice to themselves, but this is because they don't have time to do it. And that's where I want to focus on. I really want to focus on the small businesses that are trying to do the nonprofits or the whatever it may be that are doing this small event, and they just need help growing it. I've kind of talked to a few nonprofits. It sounds like in their third or fourth year, they're really needing that help of growing, and they're just not sure of how to do it or how to approach it. And sometimes it's just a matter of their website needing to look clean and have information, some collateral, social media planning, things like that. So that's kind of where we're focusing.
So you're focusing on these nonprofits that are maybe at the beginning, maybe they've had an event that didn't go as great as they'd like, and they're ready to take it to the next level.
Yeah, or if it's been going great, but now they've got to change it up. You mm-hmm. know, now they've got to, you know, when you first start a nonprofit fundraiser, you know, it's people are drawn to the cause and they want to come in, and you get the people that are already following you.
Right, these are the super fans.
Right, the super mm-hmm. fans. And then after a couple of years, you know, your super fans want to protect you and want to support you, but they can't always be right. there. So you have to constantly be promoting yourself and marketing it so that you get followers, so that when your super fans are not available, you've got other
right.
people.
You can,
and to create more super fans.
Right, to attract newer people.
And
right.
I think there's definitely that motivation in the nonprofit, because I remember when I worked there and I said, well, you know, how do you keep funding salaries? They're like, well, it's you know, providing yourself. You're like, oh, well, there's some incentive. So, I mean,
exactly.
those super fans only take you so far.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So now, do you have any advice for this nonprofit? Like, what would you do if they are, you know, to help them?
You know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, and not because we're in websites, this is kind of what got me into it. Because again, my background wasn't in websites,
right.
but website is really your foundation to people finding you. I think that in technology and what's available today, there's a lot of ways to tell your story and to build your website without costing a gazillion dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your foundation. You know, you can have Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram, and all those things are tools for people to interact with you. But we're not in the day and age where, you know, the yellow pages are, there's more than an option of the yellow pages. And it drives me crazy when I see a website and that's basically what it is. It, you
right.
might as well be a listing in a yellow page ad. You know, it's just, so I would say focusing on the website, making sure that it tells your story. You know, people are drawn in to know, especially for nonprofits, because it's about the cause. So you've got to make sure that you're describing the cause and your story and why, you know, you got into it and what it's who it's helping. You know, we talked about it with the at the Alt MBA, one of the first projects that we did is the goal setting, right?
Right.
Who is it for? What is it for? And the why. Those are the things that people should be able to find very easily. So that would be the biggest thing that I would go after. And making sure then the board is very involved and also has means to share that story. Making sure that you're arming them with stories and collateral and information and, you know, sending them, if you just publish something on Facebook, send them the link, make it easy for them to share it with their network and their groups, not having them go hunt the information down.
Now, what are some ways that a person can really get the most out of an event? Like, why is an event a good thing to be doing from a marketing standpoint?
So an event is, you know, people like to party. So while the event is not necessarily, you know, a lot of times it's not necessarily a moneymaker, but it's a form of advertising. I don't think an event should be the only thing that you're doing. And so the most important part about an event for a fundraiser is what you're doing when they're there. Because the point of it is you want them to leave with being excited about your mission and your goals so that they are reaching out and knowing and figuring out how they can help further. Mm-hmm. So whether it's through the program, it's through collateral, and it's through follow-up. Follow-up is the biggest thing after the event because they come, they have a good time, you talk to them. But if you don't follow up with the people that were there, then, you know, the message could die down very quickly.
I think that's the hardest part. One of the hardest parts for people to understand is that follow-up is so important.
Yeah.
And I hear nonprofits all the time say, well, I hate asking for money. I don't want it to look like we have our hand out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And if you're not asking for money, then find somebody who can ask for money and right. doesn't have a problem exactly. asking for money. Because, yeah, it's very easy to just lose sight of that. The follow-up is huge. I mean, with anything, right? Whether you're doing sales or nonprofit or whatever it is, if you don't follow up, things can just don't fall back into place.
Now, how do you counsel your clients on helping their sponsors be successful and getting engaged with an event?
So, you know, it's leveraging who they are and finding out, you know, a lot of times fundraisers will put together a sponsorship deck that's kind of tried and true and what they believe that the client or the corporate sponsor wants. My encouragement is tailor it, right? If somebody's willing to give you $5,000 or $10,000, let them come to you and say, here are the things that we want to be engaged with.
Kind of build it to their wish list if you can.
Exactly.
But
if you can.
Start there. Rather than just kind of a menu of you get these six things, whether you like them or not.
Right. I mean, you can have something to fall back on because sometimes people don't know what to ask for.
Right.
But to be flexible, really, the more flexible that you are, the more people are going to come to you. Mm-hmm. And really targeting, I would say, a lot of research. You want to target corporate sponsors that have a kind of a skin in the game of what you're all about, right? So researching people, VPs or decision makers that are in a specific corporation that maybe have a history of what your nonprofit is all about, or maybe they've served on a board in the past on a nonprofit that's similar to yours. So somewhere where you want to find that connection. And finding the people that you already are engaged with, their board members, is really leveraging who they know. Because a lot of times it's just about who knows who. Not who you know, but who knows who you know knows.
And do you do all that research for clients, or are you consulting with them and coaching them on how to?
We consult and coach. We can certainly, you know, the smaller ones, you know, we try to be cognizant of their budget, right? So the more I'm spending time, the more it costs them. And my bleeding heart sometimes is like, I'll do it all for you.
They got to teach them how to fish.
But exactly. So it's kind of just working through it and kind of arming them with the right information and the right way to kind of go about it and how the event can really help with that goal of theirs.
So now walk me through that first conversation you have with the nonprofit that's considering using your services. So what are some of the questions you ask and what are the questions they ask you?
We ask a lot of, you know, what's your goal? Who is your audience? Who are your demographics? Who are you going after? Mm-hmm. How do people find you? What's your history? What's working? What's not working? You know, what's your ideal engagement? Kind of digging deep, kind of like what Alt MBA did with us is digging deeper into kind of figuring out who you are and what you're all about. And really stepping outside of the comfort zone. The approach that we take is really, we like to tell people stories and we're very direct and we don't really sugarcoat. So if there's something, you know, transparency is really what we play on. So being able to, if somebody wants something or doesn't want something because they believe it's not what they need and maybe we have a different thought process, we will share it. Of course, it's up to the client, depending on what they want to do, how they want to do it. But we're there to help them step outside the comfort zone. And so we're patient. We'll hold their hand if that's what they need in regards to being able to let go. A lot of the smaller nonprofits, you know, they've been doing it themselves all along, all the time. So being able to let go is very hard, right? So it's just being flexible, being that, you know, the wind beneath your wings, kind of, where I'm there when you need me, but I'm not going to push you until you want me to push you further. So it's really just having an open dialogue and open communication throughout the whole process. And that's really the approach that we'd like to take with them.
Now, do you specialize in any specific areas of nonprofit or across all?
Yeah, right now we're kind of across the board. For me, anything dealing with children is dear to my heart. So for a very long time, I've been involved with No Kid Hungry personally. So anything that deals with children, I probably kind of fear to. But really, any nonprofit right now, we're kind of going after.
And then if somebody wants to have a meaningful conversation, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
My email is natasha@flavorexp.com.
And flavorexp.com is a website. And then you're available also on other social media channels, or is that your website is primary right now?
Website. We also have a Facebook channel, and we're on LinkedIn.
And then you mentioned No Kid Hungry. Are there other nonprofits you support?
Well, Les Dames d'Escoffier is a nonprofit that is in the culinary and food and beverage hospitality world. And I'm a member, and I sit on the board as well, where we help fund culinary dreams of young
women
leaders, right? Young women. Yep.
And Jen, any advice? I like to put you on the spot for some free consulting for our guests.
I mean, I really think, you know, I'm sure, you know, getting involved and just, you know, with the junior league and because I'm thinking too, there's so many nonprofits that, you know, when they win a grant in that third or fourth year, and then I've seen some of them have that tack on that you have to then sponsor an event for that, you know, grantor, and I don't know how to do this. I've never done this. You know, what a great way for you all to find out who those grants are and start interacting with their applicant pool.
Absolutely. Thank
Good
you.
Good stuff. See that on the,
we yeah, make on the do fly. That on the That's fly. Great.
The nonprofit ladies. <That's right. laughs>
We'll take it.
Well, Jen, if somebody wants to get a hold of you.
Sure. At Jen O'Pry, www.streamlinecc.net, and jopry@streamlinecc.net is my email. So.
Good stuff. Well, thank you both for being part of the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This is Lee Cantor for Jen O'Pry and all of the Business Radio X family. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.